Inflation is cooling down significantly. Last month, it hit a two-year low with a 3% increase. That's getting closer to the Federal Reserve's target of 2%. It could be a turning point for the U.S. economy, but the Fed isn't declaring victory quite yet. Our next guest is with us for a look at some of the causes of longer-term inflation, including accusations of greedflation, where companies keep charging more because they can. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed price changes lately at the grocery store, the gas pump? Are you able to afford rent or a house in the community you want to live in? What questions do you have about the long-term progress, the saga of inflation? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Lydia DePillis is a reporter on the business desk at the New York Times. Lydia, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be with you.
This 3% number sounds pretty good compared to where we were, say, a year ago in particular, a big drop from then. How big a deal is this one data point from last week?
Well, it's certainly really good to see. It's down from 9% back in June 2022, but it's not a done deal at the moment. And that's what you'll see the Fed be concerned about going forward. This is a well-timed conversation coming right before the July Fed meeting tomorrow, where they will decide how much to raise interest rates again. One thing I would note is that the 3% number is all types of goods and services. Mm-hmm. The Fed tends to pay closer attention to is the core rate, and that's stripping out food and energy, which tend to be a lot more volatile, and they just cycle up and down a lot more quickly. So when they look at the core, that's still running pretty hot. It's fallen, but not quite as much. And so that's what they're going to want to see come down further before they really declare victory and go home.
I wonder about a perception gap over inflation, because I feel like as a consumer myself, I notice energy prices, gas prices that are on signs everywhere you walk and drive, food prices I notice when I go grocery shopping. How much of a gap can there be between our perception as consumers and what the Federal Reserve and others are looking at when it comes to inflation?
Yeah, that's a good point, because when you look at the graph of year-over-year inflation rates and you see it coming down, that looks really great. But it's not saying that prices are coming down. It's just saying that prices are growing less quickly. So if you think back to 3 years ago, you know, your broccoli or your gas or your car insurance are still going to be quite a bit more than they were back then, on average about 21% more. So until you see prices actually fall, which we're not sure will happen, it's still going to be a frustrating situation for consumers.
Now, there have been big, long arguments, some of them on this show, about what drove that inflation. And people point toward, you know, post-COVID demand plus supply chain difficulties, government spending in the U.S. and elsewhere, the war in Russia and Ukraine. Some of those are in the rearview mirror, I think, mostly, obviously not the Russia-Ukraine war. What do people point to as factors for the inflation rate coming down from that peak last year?
Yeah, and you know, the fight I find kind of dumb, because obviously all of those things played a role, and economists have offered many explanations for how much of a role each one played. So there's room for debate around that. But in terms of why inflation has fallen, so it's funny, because at the outset, the Fed got a lot of flack for saying that we think inflation is transitory. It's going to be over before you know it. Obviously, that was wrong. But it was also wrong in the short term. In the long term, there's a lot of goods and services that came back down kind of naturally as a reversion to the mean, right? We see this most pronounced in the price of goods, because those were the things that we all bought all at once, driving at the price, combine that with supply chain snarls, made them very scarce and drove up the prices very high. Now, all of that is clearing out, right? Like those long backups at the ports are pretty much resolved. Most factories are back online. We've stuffed our houses as full as they can get with new couches. And so those kinds of prices are pretty much almost back to where they were. Now, the thing that is continuing and preventing inflation from sinking as quickly are some of your prices, right? Your haircuts, your amusement parks. And that's because what followed the run-up in prices was workers saying, we need better wages in order to afford the new cost of living, which then drove up the price of services, which has prevented the overall rate from falling as much as it could have.
We're talking about the latest inflation news with Lydia DePillis from the New York Times. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, your experiences at 800-642-1234. Lydia, one fundamental cost that people are facing if they want to find a new place to live, housing, a report by the National Low Income Housing Coalition found if you are a minimum wage worker, there is no state, county, or city in the United States where you can afford a two-bedroom apartment. How do things like housing factor into how we measure inflation?
Yeah, well, I mean, the minimum wage statistic you cited probably is more a commentary on the minimum wage than it is about the price of housing. But yeah, so that is one of those goods that, so when we talked about why inflation is falling, right, I sort of neglected to mention the Fed's increased interest rates, right? Because that was its remedy to sky high inflation. It wanted to make borrowing more expensive, which makes businesses slow down. They don't hire as much. People don't have as much spending power. And so they don't spend as much on goods and services. So the prices come down, right? So so that translated pretty quickly into the housing market, right? Because if you need to borrow a bunch of money to buy a home, instead of 3% interest rates, you're going to have to pay 7-8%. And that adds hundreds of dollars to a monthly payment, which has driven up prices even higher than they were just naturally because people were moving into bigger spaces. People were decoupling from family members because they wanted to separate out and move to further out locations during the pandemic, right? So all of that has driven up the cost of housing a ton. And it hasn't really been falling because we have this very constrained supply. And the irony of that is that interest rates operate in a couple of different ways. One is trying to suppress the prices, but the other is suppressing construction. So the fact that builders now have to pay more for construction loans has made it so that it's harder to build apartments. So that supply is slowing down, and also single family homes. And also it's made it so that people who already own their homes, the last thing they want to do is sell it if they'd have to turn around and buy something else at a much higher interest rate. So all of that is combined to make it a really frustrating situation for anyone who's trying to buy a home. If you're trying to rent a home, prices are coming down gradually. That's part of the picture in what's bringing down overall inflation. But again, those prices are a lot higher than they were at the before the pandemic started.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Wauwatosa. Chris, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to, the caller or the speaker was talking about inflation and workers' wages. And I just, it just seems like nobody ever really talks about the impact that is, that, you know, more money flowing to the top and larger profit margins and payouts to like shareholders and stuff, how that never, it seems like that's never talked about.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. And you have talked about this elsewhere, Lydia, accusations of greedflation, the idea that companies can boost their profits by keeping prices higher because we're used to paying higher prices.
Yeah, there's been a lot of debate around this. And I do think it is an element of what we're seeing, right? All of these factors are playing a role in inflation. When inflation is high because of initially all of these supply chain issues we talked about, that makes it a lot easier for corporations to say, well, consumers expect prices to be high, so maybe we can hide a little extra profits amongst all of that. And so you really did see profits spike. And, you know, some orthodox economists will usually say, well, it's just supply and demand. When supply is down, prices go up. That allows the market to clear, but it does manifest in much higher profits. And it also, companies have gotten used to those profits. And if they're very large companies that have a greater share of the market than they might have 10, 30 years ago, they are able to exert pricing power and keep those prices higher for longer. And we really have seen this in particular in the car market, some of the consumer packaged goods like your chips and sodas. So that is absolutely a factor. We're not totally sure on how much it's actually driven inflation, but you're not wrong to think, Chris, that that is a feature. And when it comes to wages, so we actually have seen some of the biggest wage increases in decades for especially low wage workers, which has been really encouraging, but they haven't felt it very much because inflation has been higher. And only recently has that started to turn around, where wage growth is moving faster than inflation, putting more spending power in people's pockets. Hopefully those wage gains will stick around while inflation is falling, making it a little bit easier to make ends meet.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Lydia DePillis, reporter on the business desk at the New York Times. We're talking about a decline in the inflation rate in the latest data, what that could mean for the American economy, and the prices we pay for stuff. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How has inflation affected your household budget? Are you feeling the cooling effects of lower inflation this summer or not? Is there a particular item that's challenging for you, whether it's housing or you needed a new car or something, or maybe just your grocery bill that stood out to you as you're paying a lot more than you used to? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about inflation and all of its cousins, greedflation, wageflation, shrinkflation, maybe even some Beyonceflation. Economics reporter Lydia DePillis from the New York Times is here to help us sort it all out. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed the impact on your life of higher prices over this last year? Are you seeing any relief? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Dubuque. Jim, hi.
Hi. A couple things. We've talked about how inflation is going down. I believe about 16% or maybe a little more of the index is energy. And so some of that reduction in inflation, price inflation, is due to the president administration sacrificing our petroleum reserves, emergency reserves, to hold prices down or to lower them, whatever they could. And second, I think food costs are going to go up because Ukraine violated the grain deal by using ocean-going drones to attack the civilian infrastructure of the Kursk Bridge. And so now the grain supply is going to be at a much higher price.
Jim, thanks for the call. And Russia, of course, attacking Ukrainian grain supplies and backing out of a deal. Let's start with that oil point. First of all, Lydia, one of the least predictable things out there, I'm looking at a chart of oil prices. It goes up and down a lot. How much is something like releasing some strategic oil reserves, or, as our caller mentioned, going to help bring that price down and help bring overall inflation down?
Yeah, I mean, using the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to try to bring more supply onto the market, which obviously had been constrained by global disruptions, it was widely credited for being fairly successful, right? It's very difficult for the president to control the price of anything because it is so subject to global supply and demand, from how fast China is growing to how much supply OPEC wants to put on the market. So Jim is right that was a huge factor in overall prices coming down. Where that goes in the future, it's not really clear, because other types of energy are starting to become increasingly important when it comes to fueling our cars or heating our homes. And yes, there's a big concern that food prices will go up because of continued fighting in Ukraine, and most recently, as you noted, the determination by the Russians to stop the grain trade. But that might be a bigger problem, to be honest, for some of the emerging markets that really depend on that grain, and Europe, the U.S. obviously is a huge producer of food in its own right.
Thanks for that call. Jeff joins us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I love talking about this. It's so important for us to be educated. Our GDP is about $34 trillion a year. My question is, the money that is in circulation in our economy, how does that affect inflation? every year.
Jeff, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, thank you, Jeff. I mean, I think that it's a big blunt instrument, right? The money supply classically was usually thought of as the main, maybe even sole driver of price growth or degrowth. And I think that things have gotten more complicated. And there's a lot more factors that are on a micro level going to influence day-to-day changes. Now, the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates, so that means sort of gradually reducing the money supply. You might attribute the sinking inflation to that in part, but we don't really know how much of that has sunk in yet, right? The classic Milton Friedman dictum that changes in interest rates act with long and variable lags, that might have sped up because information flow has increased in recent years, which means that the transmission from monetary policy into markets might have been accelerated, right? So if you were keeping an eye on your 401k last year, you probably noticed it was much smaller at the end of 2022 than it was at the beginning. And that's because monetary policy had an impact on the price of equities. So it's a fair question, but I do think it's just much more complicated than we once thought it was.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Talk about inflation with Lydia DePillis with the business desk at the New York Times. Lydia, I want to touch on a few different angles of inflation. This idea was around before COVID shrinkflation. The idea like, okay, hey, this box of cereal costs the same as it used to. Hey, wait a minute. It's got 4 ounces less cereal in it. A sort of sneaky way to deal with inflation. How big a factor is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that our federal data agencies don't really track. Mm-hmm. But, you know, your grocery store should have a price per ounce so you can actually tell whether that's going up or down. So I think that was a clever workaround, especially in that sort of consumer packaged goods category where, you know, you notice your box of grape nuts, it looks a little bit smaller, but you can't really tell because it's the same dimensions. So that kind of thing probably is one of the more sticky ways in which companies have managed to sell less but make more. and so I think that's the kind of thing that you should keep a really close eye on. There's a bunch of websites that track this sort of thing. So if you're really into getting more for your money, make sure you don't get deceived by that kind of tactic.
I mentioned shrinkflation. There's greedflation, a lot of others. Last month, the Guardian newspaper reported that people in Sweden were blaming inflation on a Beyonce concert in Stockholm, calling it Beyonce-flation. Are we reaching peak prefix-flation use here? Are we overdoing this?
Well, I think everyone is certainly sick of this inflationary moment and would like everything to get back to normal. I mean, the Beyonce episode to me was more an illustration of how national markets for extremely popular things have just made prices for that kind of exceptional item with limited supply, right? There's only so many seats at a Beyonce concert. Incredibly expensive, right? We all know about the same things now. So there's sort of less diversity in cultural output in a way. Like just think about the Barbie movie this past weekend, right? We're all because we all are tuned into the same social media and TV channels, know that this thing is really exciting. And so I'm sure prices for movie tickets will probably show a bump just for the month of July.
Speaking of tickets, you wrote earlier this month about plane tickets, a summer drop in airfare prices after them going, seemed like up and up. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, and that's an example of a market where there's a lot going on, right? Both on the supply and the demand side. I think, though, that this year it is really a normalization of the supply side, where airlines have figured out how to keep their, you know, pilot rosters full and stewardesses and, you know, ground crews, obviously not without hiccups. There's been plenty of that. But after a situation where they went from a total icy freeze in 2020, mothballed a bunch of planes, and then had to come out of that in the middle of emergence from the pandemic, huge surge in demand, all those forces are kind of normalizing now. And now all we have to worry about is giant storms and runways that are too hot to fly on. And I just, you know, one thing I will note on that is that a big lurking force here is actually climate change, because that's a really disruptive force when it comes to the supply of all kinds of things, from food to energy to housing to cars, right? If you have a hurricane, it wipes out a bunch of homes and cars. So that's the kind of thing that economists are worried that in the long term will keep price growth higher, because we just have these big whacks to the supply of things we need.
One bit of economic news just out here. People have been worried about a UPS strike. Could have been a big shock, a lot of disruption to the economy and the supply chain. Looks like there's a deal. That strike will not happen. They've reached an agreement. How big a deal is it that we're going to avoid that six-digit 340,000 worker strike?
Yeah, no, that's huge news. I'm sitting here in the Times newsroom, and there was a kerfuffle when it happened, because we'd prepared for what the consequences of a long-term strike would be. And it would be really significant because we all depend so much now on package delivery, is increasingly since the pandemic, right? And so, but it's also great news for labor. You know, I'm not super familiar yet with the details of the deal, but it sounds like those workers got something that they were satisfied with. And that's good news for the sustainability of wage increases. We've got a few more labor discussions on the horizon. The United Auto Workers are also entering bargaining with the big three automakers. So we'll see what happens there, because that's something that could really impact the price of cars if they decide that they're not getting what they want from their employers. So, you know, it's been quite an interesting summer of strikes and almost strikes. And I do think that it says a lot about how much workers want from this economy, where they see prices, where they see companies raking in profits and have the same expenses.
Lydia, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Sure thing.
That's Lydia DePillis, a reporter on the business desk at the New York Times. She joined us today for a look at what's going on with inflation lately, what it all means for the U.S. economy and for you.